Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on the Blog Talk Radio Show on every evening, 7 days a week, either 6:30, 8 o'clock, or 9:30, or 10 or 11. And you're going to be treated to intellectual honesty and honest discernment. And we aim to get at the truth and get at the facts by means of critical thinking and by reading great books, which is very important. I'll get into that later in the show, but I recommend two, War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy and John Milton's Paradise Lost, where he considered the critical event in human history was man's fall into sin, and it's quite obvious that we live in a world extremely encased in evil and sin, with six genocides in the last past 100 years. I'll get into this a little later in the show, but I'm going to talk about what Jesus means by loving your neighbor as yourself. How are we to understand this particular dictum? It's quite challenging because he tells us to love a person we don't even know or may not even care about. And he tells us we should love him as much as we love ourselves. Is he telling us to love ourselves? I don't think so. But anyway, I'm going to get into this in a few minutes. And right now, I'm going to give you a little background about me and where I'm coming from in this show. I am a politically incorrect person. I don't go in for political correctness. I don't go in for media lies, media falsehoods, political rhetoric, or media propaganda. I eschew it. I don't waste my time on it. I'm after truth and facts, and that's all, which I found in Holy Scripture primarily, but I found in other books, such as Tolstoy's Anna Karenina and E.M. Forster's A Passage to India and John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, and in the works of Bonhoeffer, Calvin and Luther, and Augustine, and the Epistles of Paul. That's where you're going to find the facts and truth, and nowhere else. Next, I'm going to, as I say, it's a politically incorrect show. We don't go in for political nonsense, political correctness, and the show has a Christian perspective. This is something I deeply believe in as a person, that Jesus' love for all humanity, he cast down his life for all humanity, and something I deeply believe in. I adhere to all Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation, every word, without doubt. In addition, I adhere to the creeds of the Church, the Apostles and Nicene and Athanasian Creed, and to the great Christian books of the past, whether Augustine, and particularly the Epistles of Paul, and St. Augustine, and St. John Chrysostom, and many others that are too numerous to enumerate, Origen, Gregory Nazianzus, whoever you want to name. I am concerned with Dante. I'm concerned with Milton. I'm concerned with great books, great Christian ideas and books. These, as Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, he said that we want to read books that are going to stretch our minds, that are going to make us bigger persons than we possibly thought we could be. We want to read books that will raise us up, not pull us down, which is our prison society, since we are being pulled down by many forces of evil and, say, satanic forces of lies. I'm not interested in being pulled down, and as Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, you want to read a book that's going to stretch your mind and raise you up. He also said that images such as television, computers, and movies are drugs. And they can't replace complex print thinking, which is what we should be concerned about. And also, ladies and gentlemen, please, for God's sake, take your children to the library, take them to Amazon, get the right books, read the right books, guide them, help them. Don't leave them to be made fools of by the forces in our society that want to make fools out of people in order to attain political control. Give your kids the right books and read with them. And it could be Milton's Paradise Lost. It could be Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. Most of all, it could be the Epistles of Paul. Go with your children to these books and work with them and raise minds. John Stuart Mill read most of the classics by the time he was 12 years old. This included Herodotus. It included Plato. He read the six dialogues of Plato by the time he was six, and read the he began Greek by the age of three. This is what people, our children, are capable of if given the opportunity and given the right background. As I say, also in this Christian shows, I've had many visitors from many countries, including Islam. I've had a visitor from Saudi Arabia that has visited my Blog Talk radio show many times, and many of my Islamic brothers and sisters have visited these Christian shows, and they seem to like it. They're smart. They're intelligent. They're open-minded. And I had an Iranian philosophical student who I became friends with in Iran, who told me she loved my Christian books. Very smart person, very open-minded, very intelligent. And so, which is what we want in people. We don't want people who can't think. We want people who can think and raise their sights beyond some kind of television show. You want to be at that level, that's your choice. It's going to ruin you. It's going to destroy you. But it will. I can guarantee it. As I said, the face of the love of Christ is found in all races, in all peoples, and in all faiths. Therefore, I want to dialogue with all faiths. I want to know other people, because I know that Jesus died for them and loves them immeasurably. As St. Paul said in his letter to Timothy, God wills that all men and women be saved, everyone. He also said, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth me will never die. He made that unequivocal statement in John, I am the resurrection of the life. He that believeth in me will never die. He said it, he meant it, and he sent a message to us about what he has to offer in terms of eternal life. And then I have a political position, basically conservative, but I also have a great concern for following the life of Christ and his ideas. And I know that Jesus had a great concern for poverty and underclass people. He chose his disciples, tradesmen, fishermen, a tax collector. Many of his followers were so-called sinners, meaning ritual law and moral sinners. These are the people that were attracted to him. And as it was said of him, who is this man that eats with publicans and sinners? They couldn't understand that an intelligent, educated Jewish man could spend his time with sinners and publicans and tax collectors. They said, and can anything good come out of Nazareth? They meant it. They couldn't believe that this man, this intellectual giant, could come out of this hick town. Next, I wish to tell you that I have written about 10 books, Christian books and legal books. The Christian books are Essays in the Christian Worldview, and another one is Essays on Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy. Another one is a book, My Interpretation of the 41 Parables of Jesus. The parables are very valuable material. They represent the thinking and mind of God and Christ. They're wonderful. You can't spend enough time reading them. You can't spend enough time listening to and absorbing the words of Christ in the Gospels, which is found in the parables. I've also recently written a book on the Psalms, an interpretation of 150 Psalms. These Psalms I've read them in Hebrew when I was in seminary. And I also memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm while a young person in Sunday school. The Psalms are great literature. They are lyric poetry of an outstanding character. And they bring us to God and Christ immeasurably because of the thinking in them. John Donne said of the Psalms, the great Anglican poet and writer, he said of the Psalms, they are the manna of the church. He meant it, this genius, this poetic genius, said they were the manna of the church. If you haven't read the Psalms, you haven't lived. And as I say, I challenge you to say to me, which you're going to tire of more, the Psalms in an English translation or Dostoevsky in an English translation. I guarantee you it's going to be Dostoevsky and not the Psalms. Next, I'd like to tell you about other books that I'm in the process of writing and have written. I'm writing a book of my four blogs, political, philosophical, theological, and current events. I'm writing a book on those blogs, four blogs, books. I'm writing a book on the miracles in the Bible. I've written a chapter on it, on the miracles in the Bible. Of course, you got to enter the biblical worldview. You have to suspend your disbelief in the supernatural and miracles. The Bible is full of miracles and replete with miracles. That's how you got to approach it. Unless you believe in miracles and in the supernatural, you're wasting your time in even thinking about the Bible and dealing with it. Next, I've written a book on the family law, New York Family Law and Practice, edited by Merrill Sobey, and the book has a chapter on paternity. It's been widely bought. I also have written a book on New York jurisprudence, an encyclopedia article on New York jurisprudence on criminal law and hearings. I've written a book on evidence and res gestae found in Bender's Consolidated Evidence. And I'm writing, as a book on these blogs, four books, that'll be four books, and I'm sure you find value in print. Print is the only way to know and to learn. There is no other route. You will be fooled by television and these images which make fools of you intellectually. I've also written three law review articles, one in the Syracuse Law Review on criminal procedure, which has been bought by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court. It's very widely bought by universities in North America, South America, Africa, and Asia. I've written two articles in Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal, on the United States educational system and on the sexual orientation discrimination. Let me say this, although I personally have moral reservations concerning homosexual activity as a Christian, I have no prejudice. I don't think they should be discriminated against. I don't think they'd be subject to any sort of dislike or hate. I love them, God save them, and I want them to be with me in heaven if I get there. That's about it. I've also written on the United States educational system, defining the problem in Academicus, which is ruining our young people with the books they're being assigned. And I wrote on these two Academicus articles were bought by the State Department and many universities throughout the world. So that's about it for me here in terms of my background, whatever you may think of it or be concerned about it. But I'd like to talk about Jesus' command, and it is a command to love your neighbor as yourself. It's a very difficult command. I'm going to go over why the difficulty of it and comment on it. First of all, we have to know who our neighbor is. This can be interpreted in a number of ways. What Jesus means by neighbor, he means any person we encounter in life. I'm convinced of that. He means this person deserves our love and respect, whoever they are. They could be from anywhere. They could be from Iran. They could be from Iraq. They could be from Saudi Arabia. Whoever they are our neighbor, and he commands us to love them as we love ourselves. So we have to understand he means by neighbor any person you encounter. Second, there's another thing that has to be handled here, that you have to understand what another meaning attached to neighbor. He means that the person who gives help and love to you is your neighbor and deserves your love. And that's an example of this is the parable of the Good Samaritan, where the Samaritans were outcasts in Palestine. They were non-persons. They were disliked, prejudiced against, like black people in the South. And this Samaritan, saw a man suffering, having been beaten, and gave him help. So that Samaritan, Jesus tells us, he is was the true neighbor. Therefore, we have to understand that being a neighbor is not merely being nice. It's helping people. That is a person who is a neighbor and who deserves our love because they are helping you and me. And the same is true of the story of the centurion servant, where a pagan Roman is shown to be a neighbor in helping someone. So the help, yes, everyone is our neighbor in the world on some level. And Jesus tells us we are to love them as we love ourselves. I'm going to go into the loving them and loving themselves and loving ourselves, but he also means that the person who helps you and aids you and assists you is your neighbor, is your true neighbor. The other people are theoretical neighbors. So we have to understand what he means by neighbor. He means that everybody is our neighbor and deserves our love and help. I don't think there's a question about that. But then he also means that the person who helps another person is the true neighbor. So this is a very thought-provoking commandment found in the Gospel of Matthew and Mark. Matthew presents in chapter 19 Jesus is saying, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Again in chapter 22, verses 37 to 39, Jesus says, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind." In verse 38 he says, "This is the first and great commandment." And in verse 39 he says, "And the second is likened to it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." And then Jesus says in Matthew, 22nd chapter, that these two commandments depend on all the law and prophets. It's also found these words are found in Mark chapter 12, where Jesus says, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment." And then he's quoted as saying, "The second is like unto it, thou shalt love the neighbor as thyself. There is no other commandment greater than these," Jesus says. Both loving the Lord with all thy heart and loving your neighbor are very demanding thoughts and commandments. They don't come naturally to us. After all, why should we be loving the Lord when we can't even see him? We can't even talk to him. Well, there's no relationship there. Then he says, "What about your neighbor? How can you love someone? How can you love someone you don't even know, or essentially you are indifferent to?" Yet Jesus commands it. So it's important to understand that Jesus commands us to do this because it doesn't come naturally to human nature. So this little essay proposes to examine certain aspects of Jesus' commandments to love our neighbor as ourselves. The commandment is somewhat puzzling since we are told to love our neighbor as ourselves. And how can we love someone that we don't even know or care about, probably, or are indifferent to? And then he tells us we are to love ourselves as we love ourselves. Perhaps love of self has been incorrectly interpreted. Does he really tell us here? I can understand that he could tell us to love our neighbor, and it's a command, but it's very difficult to do because you don't know this person, you don't have a relationship with them, and they may not care about you, and you don't care about them. But he still commands it because it's the only way that we can love our neighbor is by fulfilling this command. It is a command of the Son of God. It doesn't come naturally. It isn't based on looks. It isn't based on having nice clothes. It isn't based on having a lot of money. None of these factors are involved. The meaning of the saying we should treat our is that we should love our neighbor. I think not that we should love ourselves, but that we should treat our neighbor with the same respect and consideration with which we regard ourselves. He's not telling us to love ourselves, but to treat our neighbor, and not to love our neighbor in the sense that we should treat our neighbor with the same respect and consideration with which we regard ourselves. So he's not telling us to love ourselves. He's telling us to treat our neighbor with the same respect that we would wish to be given. Not loving ourselves, but giving our neighbor the same respect and consideration which we regard ourselves. The second observation about this commandment, it is, as I said, it is a command. It would appear it's commanded because the love of neighbor does not come easily, and so it is commanded significantly. Fallen human nature, and I think you would all agree that people are, I'm a failure and you're a failure and everybody else is a failure as human beings, since we are fallen and selfish and self-centered. But anyway, certainly fallen human nature involves self-love and self-centeredness as opposed to love of our neighbor, whom we may not know at all or be indifferent to or not care about at all. So it is a commandment, and it doesn't come easily. That's why it's commanded. And certainly, fallen human nature, which I share, and everybody shares, involves self-love and self-centeredness, as opposed to love of our neighbor, whom we may not know at all, be indifferent to, or not care about. So, it's a command, because fallen human nature involves self-love and self-centeredness, as opposed to love of our neighbor, who may be indifferent to, essentially. This commandment to love our neighbor is not difficult and challenging, extremely difficult. It is commanded because it is so hard. And Jesus says not only to love our neighbor, he says to love our enemies. He says to pray for those who persecute you. He goes further and further in commanding these very difficult ideas. Nevertheless, it is commanded. And the Christians who follow Christ are told they must follow this commandment of showing charity and love to all who may pass by us in our life. To love our neighbor as ourselves is impossibly difficult, and most people can only halfway do it or accomplish it. The commandment is a difficult, if not challenging, command for human nature to fulfill, which is self-centered and full of self-love. And it's challenging because we are fallen human beings. That's why it is commanded, and Christians who follow Christ are told they have to follow this commandment of showing charity and love to all who may pass by it in our life. To love our neighbor as ourselves, as I say, is impossibly difficult. Certainly loving our enemies is even more difficult. And most people can only halfway accomplish this. The third and most shocking aspect of this commandment, which is a command, and he tells us, which is something which is impossibly difficult, but if we're going to follow him, this is what we have to do. He then says, what is more shocking about this, Jesus tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves. I don't think he's telling us to love ourselves, but to treat our neighbor with the same consideration as we wish to be treated. But he does not tell us that our neighbor will love us back. Anybody who's lived long enough in this world knows we are not. We can give all the love in the world. We will get nothing back. He tells us to do it, in fact, expecting nothing in return. Again, this commandment is very difficult to fulfill, since most human beings look for connection in their relationships. So he's saying the difficulty of this commandment, he doesn't tell us that our neighbor, when we love him and help him, will love us back. He merely tells us to do it expecting and gaining nothing in return. And this commandment is terribly difficult to fulfill, since most human beings look for connection and getting something from somebody in their relationships. In sum, this is a commandment that we are taught to fulfill, and the irony of it is that much as we may love our neighbor, there is a good, if not even, chance we will receive no love in return. This is sad. It's a fact. This is a commandment, Jesus' commandments, because he knows that we can't do it on our own, that we are taught to fulfill, and the irony of it is that we may love our neighbor immeasurably, but there is a good, if not even, chance we will receive no love in return. Jesus got no love. He was crucified. He got no love for all the love he gave. He was crucified, tortured, etc. This is what happened to this wonderful, loving person. He was tortured and died on the cross as a criminal. This is the gospel, and this is the command, a command of the Savior and Redeemer of the world. It's a command, and we are told to fulfill it. We are told to love our neighbor as ourselves, not because we should love ourselves, but we should show charity and love to the extent we're able to, and treat our neighbor with respect and concern as we would wish to be treated. It's commanded, as I said, because it is so terrible difficult for self-centered human beings full of self-love to fulfill this commandment. Terrible difficult. Finally, there's the issue. Does he want us to love ourselves? No, I don't think so. He wants to treat each other with respect and consideration to the extent they're able to. I'm going to go into this again tomorrow, but you'll find this little essay in my book on page 69 and 70 on Essays in the Christian Worldview, and I think you'll find it of help and value. Good night, and I'll be talking again tomorrow night, possibly on this and other issues. Thank you.